It's Mayor-elect Lenny Curry as Duval County voters make the decision in a dramatic runoff election. Full results just ahead. Good Wednesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect is always live at 9, and now catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, we've got full election results as we take your calls. Let us know what you think about the election and who you voted for. 549-2937. Then later, we'll tell you about Employ Me First, a new initiative giving people with disabilities in our area a chance to get into the workforce. Plus, the sounds of the symphony this Memorial Day holiday. All of that ahead. But first this morning, Jacksonville has a new mayor and a new sheriff. At the top of the ticket in last night's runoff election, the mayor's race. Former Florida Republican Party Chair Lenny Curry narrowly edged incumbent Mayor Alvin Brown with just over 51% of the vote. Curry says the work starts now.
This is about one Jacksonville and about one people and about our future. The message that I've carried over the course of this campaign comes from deep within me. This is what I believe. This is what we're going to do. This will be a safe city again.
Curry takes office July 1st. Just after conceding, Brown told his supporters he won't stop trying to improve Jacksonville.
I'm going to always be there for you, that single mother who's raising two or three kids, trying to put food on the table. I'm going to be there for you. For that young girl who dared to dream to go to college, I'm going to be there for you because I believe in opportunity for all.
And in the closely watched race for Duval County Sheriff, Republican Mike Williams topped Democrat Ken Jefferson. And there are also some new faces to tell you about on the Jacksonville City Council. This morning, we begin the hour with in-depth analysis of the election results here in studio. Dr. Marcella Washington, professor of political science at FSCJ. Good morning, Dr. Washington.
Good morning.
And A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics, turning around with us this morning after a late night last night. Hi, A.G.
Long time no see.
I know. I know, right? We'll go to your calls in just a moment about the election. Let us know your thoughts at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Dr. Washington, let's begin with you. A tough loss for incumbent Mayor Alvin Brown, the first African-American mayor in Jacksonville history, the first Democrat to be elected in a couple of decades. Yeah. Let's talk about the postmortem for the Alvin Brown campaign. I know you have a lot of thoughts.
It's an open casket, I think, and we have to look at the body and see what's there. I think Mayor Brown really took so many things for granted, and I don't want to be critical. You don't want to really hit a man while he's down. Certainly, it was unfortunate, and many people feel very disappointed. But Mayor Brown needed to be more engaged as a mayor, as the mayor of Jacksonville. He did a good job of saying things like platitudes. We're going to go to the next level and, you know, to make downtown a destination. And as said in his concession speech, he will be there for all of the troubled people with troubles in the city of Jacksonville. I just did not see it as much when he was mayor. And that, I think, is what Lenny Curry may have pounced on, seen, and with the crime element being what it was just an open door. And as a Republican, Lenny Curry used his stance as a Republican to bring the party together to support him.
Let's talk about the public safety issue. A.G. Gankarski, the Curry campaign, made that their signature campaign issue. It proved to be a winning data point for that campaign.
Right. They brought it up for a solid year. And, you know, the news basically helped them over the last few months. There's always something in the news, school bus shooting or, you know, something along those lines. And, you know, Curry could point to that in every speech, every debate. He's able to, you know, go rip from the headlines in his intro. And, you know, that grabs people. And, you know, something that Brown didn't have a counter to except to say in the last few weeks of the campaign, well, it's the sheriff's job to enforce the law. So he had John Rutherford messaging against him, too, saying, well, you're not giving me enough of a budget to do it. And, you know, it was basically two-on-one in that respect. And, you know, Curry was also helped by the fact that the Florida Democratic Party essentially ran the Brown campaign. They ran it from 40,000 feet up. The platitudes that Dr. Washington talked about were in full effect. And there was not specific messaging. And the closest they came to localized messaging was triangulating. They had a message for Black Jacksonville and a message for mainstream Jacksonville. And the two messages did not jibe. You know, you saw, you know, Bill Bishop in Riverside. You did not see Bill Bishop at the Gateway Rally. And, you know, vice versa. You didn't see John Lewis over in Five Points either.
549-2937. We'll go to your calls in just a moment as we discuss full election results from last night's runoff. Marcella.
Yeah, I just think that what you just said is so important and so relevant to what happened in this particular campaign. And it started way back in the beginning of the administration of Mayor Brown, when he barely won the first election. And we were very happy about that. We supported that. And then he didn't hit the ground running. It's almost as if he lived in this sort of fairy tale world that he was mayor and everything was going to be okay. As the incumbent, he'll be okay.
What are some specifics when you say that specifically? What can you give us an example?
I'm saying when there were shootings in the community, why there was no messaging from Mayor Brown. He didn't show up. He didn't try to coordinate at least with the sheriff, even if it were a media, a press release, a statement, say something. Come alive and be there for the residents of the city of Jacksonville, especially in the minority community. As an African-American mayor, we expected a little bit more from him in that arena. I think, he could have done that while still being the mayor of the whole city of Jacksonville. I think he thought if he helped out a little bit more in the minority community, oh no, then I won't be able to say I'm mayor of the city of Jacksonville. And that was a flaw.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, on the mayor's race and also the sheriff's race. We'll go to your thoughts in a moment at 549-2937. Let's talk about the sheriff's contest. That was a very hard-fought contest between Mike Williams and Ken Jefferson. In the end, Williams was victorious. Let's talk about those campaigns.
Yeah, just like the mayoral race was basically a 51-49 race. You know, Williams pulled it out in the end. You know, party identification helped. Mm-hmm. What also helped was the negative messaging against Jefferson, bringing up character issues, mm-hmm. bringing up the claim that Jefferson wasn't qualified to lead a department, which was controversial to many people, you know, paying attention. But you got to pay attention to who the voters are. The majority demographic is 50 to 69-year-olds. They want to look at things like administrative experience. They want to look at things like, well, you know, this person's been a director of three or four parts of the JSO. Jefferson couldn't point to that. Mike Williams was. And the competence argument was just enough to get him over the hump.
I agree with that. I think Ken Jefferson had a lot of promise there. I think, of course, being the consultant for Channel 4, the crime analyst, he was well known. But I think as the campaign got wore on, he sort of seemed a little bit more tired and not as engaged in the particular campaign. And of course, Mike Williams kind of came up quickly. He was that shiny penny. And I think it just was in the political party that where Ken Jefferson really lost it. It was a partisan effect. And once Alvin Brown went down, so did, I think, Mr. Jefferson.
Yeah, as you both mentioned a moment ago, party line voting and negative campaigning were powerful in both contests.
Right. And, you know, the vote totals were pretty much similar in the top of the ticket races. And it was really something where the Republicans are very comfortable winning 51-49 elections. They've done it before in the city. They had two Democratic candidates opposite them with higher name recognition, higher favorables going in, and they chipped away. The data targeting machine chipped away in the mayor's race and the sheriff's race. It was basically all the internal research that you know, people did on the Williams side, and it worked.
So what lessons, then, can the losing side take from these results?
Well, I think, first of all, the Republicans were comfortable, very comfortable being Republicans. I'm not sure, at least Mayor Brown was very comfortable being a Democrat and didn't show that. The takeaway, I think, is represent your party, be a Democrat. It's okay to work across party lines. But Lenny Curry was the representative, the face of the Republican Party, and he never had a mask on about that. He always promoted that. And it's unfortunate that at least the mayor did not promote that as much.
Well, you know, interestingly, the candidate in last night's races that drew the most votes across the city is a Democrat, mm-hmm. Tommy Hazzouri,
yeah.
Former mayor, former school board member, now an at-large city councilman. Hazzouri won big last night in his at-large race against Jeff Youngblood, and we'll talk about the other city council races in a moment. But Hazzouri is a proud old-school Dixiecrat Democrat. He has bipartisan appeal. Of course, he has the name recognition, AG, but when you look at that campaign, the Democrats feel good about that one.
Well, the Democrats might feel good about it, but the people who won it were Tommy Hazzouri and Jenny Busby, the 25-year-old campaign manager who's going to be a name to watch. The Democratic Party actually worked against Hazzouri in some ways. They wanted Hazzouri and Brown on a flyer targeted to the beach because Brown's numbers were flagging so badly there. Hazzouri campaign vetoed that. They also wanted resources allocated from Hazzouri campaign to the Brown effort because you know they saw the polls, they got nervous, and they're like, well, you need to help the city out. You need to work for the mayor's reelection. And the Hazzouri people were running their own race. Brown has not reached out to Tommy Hazzouri in 4 years. Mm-hmm. He has not drawn on Tommy Hazzouri's experience. You hear tales about Brown and Hazzouri being in the same room and Brown not acknowledging Hazzouri. And can you imagine on the other side? Can you imagine Lenny Curry seeing, say, John Payton in the same room, not acknowledging him? John Delaney, that's not how it works. Alvin Brown ran as an army of one, and, you know, that's how it ended up for him.
And let's talk about the other city council races, too. Kim Daniels, a Democrat, losing to Anna Brochet, moderate Republican. That was a closely watched at-large race.
Yes, but of course, Kimberly Daniels was a different kind of candidate, and she was a Democrat who was extremely conservative, sort of a Christian coalition type of candidate, and she was an unattractive candidate, I think not very beloved by a number of voters, and I think she had to go.
And then in the other at-large race, Jacoby Pittman loses to Sam Newby.
That was a surprise.
A surprise.
The polls said that Pittman was up 10 points, recently, as recently as 2 weeks ago. So what happened? Party identification, the party helped Newby a little bit, but really the fact that Sam Newby wins tells you what a Republican night it was. Quinn Lum was saying last night at the Curry party that he went 6-2, which means that the Democrats went 2-6, and Jacoby Pittman got, drawn down in the undertow.
It was a Republican romp at the polls yesterday, and I think Jacoby Pittman certainly had the name recognition. She's well known, but Mr. Newby, we don't know very much about him, but the Republican voters are loyal, and they're disciplined, and they will vote their party line, and that's something the Democrats haven't quite gotten it together on that one yet.
And lots of calls as we discuss full election results this morning on the show. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Richard on the West Side. Hello, Richard.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. Go ahead. Thanks for holding.
Yeah, oh, thank you. I agree with most of the comments that everyone's made. It's just very useful. But I wanted to add one point, which is I think that the thing that really hurt Brown, I mean, you're talking about 5,000 votes, and I think that really made that difference was that there were so many people who typically would have been Brown supporters in the first round who were supporting Bill Bishop, or were attacking Brown for his human rights stance and beating him up. And then when we got into the second round, many of these people turned, and of course it was helpful for him to have Bishop then supporting him. But Brown had already been beaten up by these people who normally would be supporting him, but instead went with Bishop or nobody. And then, you know, at the end of the night, what happened was he lost only 5,000 votes, which he could have gotten if these other people who normally would support him had kept their eye on the ball.
That's Richard on the West Side. Thank you for the call, Richard.
And to Richard, I would say if Mayor Brown had indeed endorsed the human rights ordinance, that would have been just so easy to do. He hid behind his religious belief, I believe, and that was a problem.
Clearly, though, both of these men saw a downside to endorsing it. Obviously, the campaigns both felt that was a risk that they didn't want to take.
Well, yeah, I mean, Curry said he was unconvinced, but you got to read between the lines of that. Unconvinced isn't saying I will never, ever support. He's saying I want to have the conversation and I can be convinced. John Delaney was essentially saying that Curry could move on the issue also, on that he endorsed Curry. So it's something that we will see some movement on this in Curry's term. Will it be the, you know, HRO expansion? Will it be the anti-discrimination ordinance that the Jacks Chamber wants? The Jacks Chamber being a big winner of last night's election. Who knows? But we will see a resolution to that issue because it's best for business, and Curry and the new city council agree on that much.
Yeah, we're getting tweets about it. Yesterday was good for the HRO. Clean slate, equality majority now on the Jacksonville City Council.
Perhaps that is true, but I did hear the mayor, like Lenny Curry, this morning on the news, and he is still saying that, you know, he doesn't see a need right now for any changes in the human rights ordinance or to advance a human rights ordinance. So we shall see.
Yeah. Let's go to Gail at the beaches. Hi, Gail. Good morning.
Good morning. I haven't heard anybody talk about the financial impact of one candidate over another. If one has more money, don't they have the greater advantage? I just want to hear what your panel has to say about
that. Sure. Thank you, Gail. Yes, Lenny Curry outspent Alvin Brown 3-1. And in particular, he dominated on television. You can't discount the importance of that in this far-flung, huge county. Retail politics only goes so far with 800 square miles.
Well, we don't know the finances of the Brown campaign because it was basically filtered through the Florida Democratic Party. The Next Level PAC gave its money to the Florida Democratic Party, which spent the money, and instead of TV ad buys, they had really expensive communication staff. You had people on that staff making five figures a week. You know, they had lots of overhead. The Curry side did not have that. They put it in advertising. You do not need five communications people, especially when you're reciting the same six talking points over and over again for 6 months. Mm-hmm. That's a reality. So if you have a bloated, top-heavy staff, that's one thing. Another thing is Brown had two billionaires donating to the Next Level PAC, Shad Khan and the owner of the Miami Heat. You know, those people had unlimited resources, and, you know, there's more than enough money and more than enough resources to make the argument they wanted to make. They just didn't make it.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. The Curry campaign was all over television for weeks and weeks. It was striking to see that Mayor Brown went for some long stretches of time without television ads. Do you think that helped make a difference?
Of course, I think so. And of course, it was the type of messaging. Lenny Curry got in your face. He had his family. He had his children. He made it personal. He even said things like, you know, believe it or not, I like Mayor Brown. He's a nice person. So he made it personal. Alvin Brown never did that. And I thought he was a little bit too laid back way in the beginning, back in September, October, when Lenny Curry really began to rev up a little bit, and back in the beginning of the year, Curry did that, and Alvin Brown just was not proactive enough.
549-2937, William in Riverside along Post Street. Good morning, William. What are your thoughts?
Good morning. Good morning. Love your show.
Thanks.
Yes, ma'am. And that lady speaking, she already done read my mind. I don't know if she's psychic or anything, but she said basically what I was going to say. And the other thing, in the black community, the mayor, when Mr. Obama and them came here a couple of times, the mayor refused to see him. So I know anybody in my family didn't vote for him. But that being said, I think Mr. Curry is going to try to, like, incorporate and let everybody, you know, be a part of the system, because that's why I voted for him. He kept saying he was going to try to include everybody. And, you know, the city is a beautiful city, and I hope it works out. But Ms. Washington, you need to run for politics.
All right, that's William on Post Street. Thanks, William.
Thank you.
Dr. Washington, to be fair to our departing mayor, he did try to govern in a bipartisan manner. Clearly, though, there are some in the black community who didn't like it when he wouldn't appear with President Obama and things like that. Is that a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of decision for someone in his position?
I was not opposed to the mayor governing in a bipartisan manner. It's the way he did it. He actually embraced Rick Scott. And that's okay. Rick Scott was the governor. But he also, as the caller just mentioned, when it came time to show up for a Democrat, the president of the United States, he was nowhere to be found. And we remember that. And that when it came time to really rev up the vote, it was not there for Mayor Brown. I think he could have won this election. I really do. But there were so many factors that he didn't take advantage of that worked against him.
Yeah, I want to speak to that also. You know, Mayor Brown asked, you know, in the third debate, Curry brought up that Brown was an Obama delegate in 2012. I asked Brown about that at, you know, after the debate during the press availability. He said he didn't know what Curry was talking about. Obama comes to town in 2012. you know, Brown's out of town. And, you know, it came back to haunt them because they wanted Michelle Obama to come in the last days, reportedly. Michelle Obama's not going to do that because, you know, Alvin Brown did nothing for them. And, you know, that's the reality of it. If you want the big time Democratic Party help, you've got to be a Democrat.
Keith in Mandarin. Go ahead, Keith.
Hi. I'd just like to make some comments about the two parties. Now, I gave $1,900 in the last election for the different Republican candidates running for Congress and their committees. However, with all the money Curry had, I got tired of him. I think he ran a campaign that was too negative, and he didn't. I don't believe he really said what he wanted to do. So I voted for Alvin Brown, even though I didn't think he did such a good job as mayor. But I just, and I think these campaigns are running much, much too long. I really get turned off, you know, and it doesn't make any difference how often Curry is on the television. I have the mute button. So I would think that if they have to have a runoff, it ought to be within 2 or 3 weeks. We all know what the issues are from the general, and get this thing over. You know, in Britain they have much shorter campaigns, which I think is wonderful. And I definitely want to get all this horrendous money out of the campaigns, particularly on the federal level. But here in Jacksonville, as some people said, you know, what could Curry have done with $1 million or $2 million for the welfare of the city somehow? I think that would have been money well spent.
All right, and that's Keith in Mandarin. Thank you, Keith. Thanks so much for that.
Yeah, you know, I get the caller's point to a point, but for every two people churned off by the negative advertising, three or four lower information voters are going to be attracted to it. People who aren't watching TV 24/7, who aren't looking at every mailer that comes in. And, you know, that's the numbers game you're trying to play. Lenny Curry won this election, you know, not some big broad stroke, but with, you know, the individual appeal, with door knocking, with phone calls, with going to businesses and getting their endorsement, 50 voters, 100 voters at a time. And, you know, the negative messaging was part of that. That's how you chip away at Mayor Brown's previously impervious image.
One of the things I think Lenny Curry, of course, did very well was he was very good in getting Republicans elected, including himself. Mm-hmm. And that's something the Brown campaign should have been aware of from day one.
And, of course, it played a role in when the party, the local party, was deciding who should we put up against Alvin Brown. That had to affect it into the decision.
Why not get the chairman of the state party?
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about how party ID helped people up and down the ballot. For example, in the District 2 city council race, Al Ferraro bested Lisa King, who received every endorsement in the world, including the chambers. But the party ID was too much for her to overcome in Arlington.
Yeah, and I looked at the precincts on that, and actually King outperformed Mayor Brown in virtually every precinct. So King maximized what she could, being a Democrat. But, you know, Al Ferraro had just enough to win in terms of being in a heavily Republican district. You know, Lisa King just ran at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Agreed.
Patricia in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Patricia. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I think there were some other issues that made people switch their vote, too. I liked a lot of things Mayor Brown did, but when he started saying he wanted to implement a forced minimum wage of over $10 an hour and things like that, he lost my vote. I mean, there are other issues just besides, you know, and I did not like Len Curry's negative campaigning, but in the end, I figured, well, the man is an accountant, and he will realize perhaps what is better to get the fiscal house in order for the city. So that's what switched me from Mayor Brown to Mr. Curry. And that's just what I wanted to say.
Thank you, Patricia. In the closing weeks of the campaign, Mayor Brown did pivot to more traditional populist Democratic messaging points, like raising the minimum wage. Those weren't points that he had touched on throughout the first few years of his term.
Exactly, and it seemed as if it was a disconnect there, that all of a sudden here he was talking about the minimum wage. He didn't have time to weave that into his, you know, agenda, which would have been a good idea, but it was, he didn't start with that, and he kind of came in the last minute. And one more thing real quickly about the District 2 race. I live in that district, and of course, we worked real hard for Lisa King, but of course, Ferrero just had more money, and it was a Republican district.
Mark on the South Side. Go ahead, Mark. Okay.
Throw out there that, like you guys were talking about.
Hey, Mark. But, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to throw out there that, you know.
Okay, Mark, we lost your call. Doran on the West Side. Hi, Doran. Good morning.
Good morning. Melissa, I just wanted to express my concern at the lack of enlightened and visionary leadership on either side, whether that's Curry or Brown. And I'm really concerned that Lenny Curry's claim to fame is that he's an accountant and that he started his own business and that he's a nice guy, other than being a Republican operative. And I'm worried that, hey, there are probably several thousand men or women in Jacksonville who are independent accountants. Does that mean that they are qualified to be the mayor? I'm really worried that we don't have a qualified person that's really going to move the city forward. He'll probably do a moderately acceptable job, but I don't think he's going to move us into the next level of great cities in the United States. That's my comment. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you so much. And you heard that a lot on the campaign trail. Voters across the spectrum saying they just weren't thrilled with their choices. A.G. Gankarski.
Yeah, I mean, what we're hearing from a lot of callers, and we've been hearing it throughout, and we'll hear it some more, is that Curry's not going to get the honeymoon that Mayor Brown got. He's not going to have that 70% approval rating to start off when he might be able to earn that. But, you know, he's got to, you know, present himself in a way that is an actual unifier, not a divider. You know, he's got to basically live up to his campaign rhetoric. You know, he talked about Grand Park and places like that. He's actually got to be in those areas, Grand Park, Washington Heights, you know, looking at Cleveland Arms. He's got to do the real work and actually reach out to these parts of the community that might not have voted for him.
And I think mayors in recent history in this city in their first term have had a steep learning curve. We saw that with Alvin Brown. Others have pointed to the first term, for example, of Mayor John Payton. When he was on this program last week, he referenced that the first term is like drinking from a fire hose. And so what about AG's comment that there might not be a honeymoon period for Mayor-elect Curry?
I agree with what he just said. Of course, this morning, Lenny Curry, the mayor-elect, said, of course, he's going to represent one Jacksonville, one people. And I'm hoping that doesn't mean one Republican Party. I am just saying that the mayor-elect's experience is being a Republican operative, and that how he will govern, that is the question. We've got to see how he's going to come around to that. And he's got to do it pretty quickly.
And a few more calls, 549-2937, as we discuss last night's election results. Bill in Mandarin. Hey, Bill, thanks for holding. You're on the air. Bill, give us a call back. Let's go to James on the North Side. Hi, James. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Melissa?
Doing great.
I got one quick observation, and I'm a little stunned at the way Mayor Brown ran his campaign, because if his people had really looked at why the Republicans took the Senate and the House, is because they didn't stick together. They didn't focus on President Obama's achievement. Instead, they all ditched themselves, they ran away, and they kind of left him there, and people see that. We saw that. We saw that as Democrats. They didn't stick together. For Republicans, they don't stick together no matter what. And in this case, and I know the previous caller said about you know, when President Obama came here, Mayor Alvin Brown was nowhere to be found. I guess he thought we forgot about that. I mean, I voted for Mayor Brown, but believe me, I really forced myself to check that little box because I remember what he did. And I'll take my comments off there. Thank you.
That's James on the North Side.
Yeah, and that delineates the enthusiasm gap that was felt on the Brown side. You know, Richard Nixon said that Anwar Sadat in 1974, you can turn him out, but you can't turn him on. You know, Brown did get some turnout, but, you know, there wasn't the enthusiastic support. I mean, people tried to manufacture it, Democratic operatives, but a lot of the canvassers were block by block. They were bussed in from other places to walk the streets for Alvin Brown. They looked like they were bussed in from other places. And, you know, people noticed that, and I think that might have led to an undervote.
I will repeat that Mayor Brown needed to be a strong Democrat and represent his base, and he got away from that all the time. And he was never married to it. And it showed in the enthusiasm, or lack thereof, of the voters who came out to vote.
Bob in Arlington. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, it's Rob.
Rob, sorry.
I'm 31 years old, and I voted for the other guy, not Alvin Brown. The thing is, I don't think Brown addressed the crime in the city, because the crime rate has gone up. Yeah. And when they shot those kids at the bus and stuff like that, he didn't make a statement. I think y'all were right earlier that if he did just at least came out, try to reach for the community and maybe try to stop it. You know, John Rutherford was working on that, the other sheriff. You know, I think that he would have had a better turnout. So that's my opinion on it.
Thanks, Bob. He actually did make a statement about that shooting, but as the caller points out, a narrative had been established in the eyes of some voters that City Hall wasn't as engaged on that issue. That was certainly the perception anyway.
Yeah, it was too little too late, I think.
And so the election's over. We have a new mayor. We have a new sheriff. We have a new city council. What are your final thoughts about the new city council before we wrap this up?
I think they're going to have to get to know each other. We're going to have to get to know them. Tommy Hazuri and Joyce Morgan is a new face, I think. We're sort of hopeful about her as a council member. But we'll have to see. It's got to gel. We got to see how it works out. I'm not sure right now. I just don't know.
I am very excited about the new city council. You're losing people like Don Redman and Kimberly Daniels. You're gaining people like Tommy Hazuri, Anna Brochet. You're going to see a credibility increase. You're going to see people like Bill Gulliford and Lloyd Boyer, and Greg Anderson basically dictating the discourse. We're going to see a moderate Republican council. And, you know, we could see the new Delaney era, which had more positives than negatives, despite what the campaign rhetoric in the last couple of weeks said.
Always great analysis from both of you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
She's Dr. Marcella Washington at FSCJ and our own contributor, A.G. Gankarski, and much more still ahead. Later, the sounds of the symphony this Memorial Day holiday. But up next, how Employ Me First and the ARC Jacksonville are putting people with disabilities to work. Stay with us.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
How does mental illness affect a person's work, school, or family environment? WJCT's First Coast Forum will focus on barriers to getting treatment. A panel of mental health practitioners and advocates will discuss the obstacles people with mental illness face. First Coast Forum, Breaking Through Stigma, a conversation about mental health. Thursday, May 28th at 8 on WJCT Public Television and 89.9 FM.
Join us for the radio variety show that celebrates the culture, art, and history of Northeast Florida.
Wake up in the morning, yeah.
Swamp Radio features musicians, poets, playwrights, and interviews that tell the unique story of our home.
My idea was to take them to the epicenter of Southern cooking, the Waffle House.
What you do best is most everything.
Swamp Radio, Friday evening at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Every day on Morning Edition, it's the news you can't do without.
This morning, we've been looking at what's happening.
There's conservatism, libertarianism, environmentalism, religion.
We're not props. We're just everyday people.
The crowd, the joy, the sense of hope.
Historic.
Listen to the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Relax around the clock with the music of your life. Playing great music from Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald to James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, and more. Relax Radio, WJCT, 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
never know how much I love you.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, it's a brand new initiative, Employ Me First, and it's this area's first online resource to connect job seekers with disabilities to potential employers. Here to tell us all about it, we welcome Jim Whitaker, Executive Director of the ARC here in Jacksonville. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. And also here in studio, Brenda Britt, manager with company W&O, taking part in Employ Me First. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
All right. So, Jim, let's begin with you. The ARC does such a wonderful job working with local folks with disabilities. This is a new initiative. How did Employ Me First come about?
Actually, this is an initiative that is funded through the City of Jacksonville Public Service Grant. And what we propose to the city is that wouldn't it be a great opportunity to actually establish a website for employment opportunities, both for individuals seeking jobs with disabilities and employers who want to fill various positions within their organization. So our grant started in October of this past year, and our website is now up and running, employmefirst.org. And we have lots of activity already, so it is going very, very well.
Very nice. And, you know, Brenda, people with disabilities want to work, but they're vastly underemployed. This is a way to try to chip away at that. How is your company involved?
Well, 4 years ago, we brought Kelsey Adams on for a temporary assignment, and that was to do shredding. And it was supposed to be a three-month assignment. Well, she came on, she came to work, and every day she had a great attitude, a smile on her face, and, you know, a willingness to learn. And so what we did was we saw that she was very detail-oriented and very meticulous. So not only did we give her shredding, we said, you know what, let's see if we can train her to do other more important things. So while shredding is important, we said, okay, let's teach her how to scan. So our HR department went paperless in all their personnel files, and what she did was she made sure everything was in the right order. And then she started to scan. Well, that project took a year. In finance, we decided, okay, we want to go paperless too. We had over 20,000 credit files that needed to be scanned in. Plus, on a daily basis, all of our new credit files had to be scanned in because we wanted to go paperless and we wanted to have desktop access. So Kelsey started to do that for us. Well, she had a great attitude every day, a willingness to learn, and we said, you know, what else can she do? So we began to challenge her with a lot of other things. She began stuffing invoices into, you know, window envelopes. So, you know, and those are things that our collectors used to have to do. So now they have more time to do other things. You know, as well, we taught her how to do proof of deliveries. So we taught her how to go out onto websites and put in 16-digit alphanumeric numbers and match them up to an invoice and match a proof of delivery up. And with that, we saw, wow, she is so highly detail-oriented. We gave her that task. So today, she has about 9 tasks that she has to do on a daily basis, and she just does a fantastic job doing them.
And so you're sold on Employ Me First.
Totally sold. And I think, you know, in any organization, there are tasks that have to be done that are clerical that, you know, people like Kelsey can do so that other people in your organization could do other things.
And what's Kelsey's disability?
She has Down syndrome.
Down syndrome. But she's one example, right, of adults that you work with at the ARC that can make incredible contributions.
Absolutely. And our new initiative also includes job carving. And that's where we have a staff that goes into an employer and looks at various things that are heading within the office area, wherever it might be, and then says, well, we have people that could do this part of it, that part of it. So we actually kind of put things together to make a job for people. And then what it does, it frees up things for other employees to do what they're good at doing. So anyway, it's a win-win for the employer and, of course, the employee.
And W&O is one company taking part. What are some other companies?
Publix, is one of our, you know, most wonderful partners. A number of our people work there. We have folks in law firms doing various things, clerical sorts of things in law firms. We have people who work in retail. We have people that work at Baptist Health. They're just all over the community, and we're actually trying to place another 20 people during this year into employment and all. So it's a win-win. And most companies now also want to sort of have an integrated workforce that has some diversity, et cetera, and we can help them accomplish that.
Brenda, what advice would you have for a hiring manager at a company listening right now and thinking, oh, maybe we need to look into this?
I would say, you know, again, look at your organization. Look at the things that need to be done. You know, Kelsey is highly, highly detailed, and a lot of people with that type of disability can do the job that needs to be done. You know, I would say certainly consider it. And, you know, I was telling Jim that, you know, anybody that wants to come into our organization and see Kelsey perform her tasks, we'd be more than happy to have you there to see, you know, what a great attitude and her abilities. And then this way they could be more familiar with somebody with disabilities can do for their organization.
Sure. And at the same time, Jim, you want people to know all about the ARC Jacksonville. For
yes.
people that aren't familiar with the ARC, let's talk about its mission.
Sure. The ARC's mission is to provide services to individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And we serve an array of different folks, people that can be employed in the community, as well as people that actually need staffing 24 hours a day. We have residential group homes. We have employment training programs. We have activity programs. We just broke ground recently on the ARC Village, which is out on Hodges and Beach Boulevard. And that's a new affordable housing community for individuals to become more independent, working in the community. And also, too, I want to mention, we have one of the few college programs at the University of North Florida, which is totally inclusive. So individuals get to enjoy college life and then hopefully get employment as well.
Such a great program, such a great nonprofit. And when it comes to Employ Me First, people just need to visit the website to start, right?
Absolutely.
And it's employmefirst.org?
.org, yes.
Employ Me First and the ARC Jacksonville, putting people on the First Coast with disabilities to work. If you know someone with a disability or you're an employer, look into this. Again, it's employmefirst.org. Jim Whitaker, Executive Director of the ARC, and Brenda Britt, Manager at WNO. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And just ahead, the sounds of the symphony this spring.
This summer, WJCT will introduce several new programs to our weekend schedule. We want your help deciding which new shows come to the First Coast. Starting May 10th, tune in Sundays at 1 o'clock for a special preview of The Moth Radio Hour, Snap Judgment, Wits, and Studio 360. Help us decide what you hear on 89.9. Get more information at wjct.org/weekends.
New name, new look, great information. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Good for You is a day of celebrating women's health planned just for you. Great speakers, great food, health screenings, and so much more. Hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to wjct.com/goodforyou.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Looking for something different musically? Listen to After Hours weeknights at 7 on 89.9 FM, from classical to country.
Give me a word, give me a sign. Show me where to look and tell me what will I find. What will I find? Lay me on the ground, fly me in the sky. Show me where to look and tell me what will I find. What will I find?
Welcome back. And finally this hour, the Jacksonville Symphony is covering the waterfront this season. Young American conductor Samir Patel will conduct several concerts, including some that have already happened, like Starry Nights at Metropolitan Park, Donor Appreciation in Jacoby Hall, and the Let Freedom Ring pre-Memorial Weekend concert at First Baptist Fernandina Beach. Now, there's also the Jacksonville Jazz Festival. Peebo Bryson with the symphony. So much happening, and Samir Patel joins us now to tell us all about this flurry of concert activity. Good to see you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so let's begin with Starry Nights. Already took place, but with the Beach Boys. Boy, the fans loved that, didn't they?
That was an incredible experience. We had over 4,000 people join us, and it was a beautiful night. And of course, the Beach Boys are all legends, and so it was a really special evening. And the audience had a great time. So.
Now, they've done symphony concerts before. Had you ever done anything like that yourself?
I've done concerts like that, but that was the first time I've ever worked with them, certainly. And they certainly put on one heck of a show.
Yeah, they're real showmen. That had to have been fun.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun.
And a departure for the symphony. People think of it as traditional.
Absolutely.
And, you know.
And I think that's one of the great things about an orchestra like the Jacksonville Symphony. You see them all season long, of course, in Jacoby Hall on their Masterwork series. But really, the orchestra does so much in addition to that. They're on the road in education activities, and they also play pops concerts like that. A couple years ago, I was here doing a concert with a Classical Mystery Tour, which is a Beatles cover band. So always something fresh and exciting.
Yes, and let's talk about what's coming up. Some big concerts coming up over the holiday weekend. What's on tap?
Well, tomorrow night we are in Amelia Island with a program that we call Let Freedom Ring. It's, as you mentioned, a pre-Memorial Day celebration, and a lot of the repertoire that we'll be playing really is centered around patriotic music. So marches, we will have some music that features real classic Americana, The Music Man, Victory at Sea, music from The Big Screen by John Williams, as well as 1812 Overture, which no patriotic concert is really complete.
Not complete without it. So. That's a Memorial Day tradition, sure. Yeah. And let's talk about the Jacksonville Jazz Festival. Peebo Bryson with the symphony.
Yeah, that's very exciting because we are basically the headlining act with him on Friday evening at 9:30 p.m. And he's, of course, a legend as much as the Beach Boys, you know, but a different style of music, of course. But we're excited to be part of that. And he certainly brings his wealth of experience as a great soul and R&B singer. And so that will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's the Jacksonville Jazz Festival downtown, May 22nd, with Peebo Bryson and the symphony, the headlining act. And there's more. There's the Concert on the Green in Clay County. That's another one.
Yeah, and this comes up on Sunday evening, and we've had a long relationship with them. This has been going on for over 25 years now, and really this program is a lot similar to the Amelia Island program, a lot of the traditional patriotic favorites, but we're also featuring several young soloists that have won the concerto competition, and so this is a great opportunity for several of these young musicians to show and share their talents with us in a number of pieces. So
now you've conducted the symphony on several occasions. Mm-hmm. You just completed a tenure as assistant conductor of the Fort Wayne Philharmonic. How are you enjoying being back in town?
Oh, it's great. It's always nice to come to an orchestra that I already have a relationship with, and this week has certainly been a lot of music for us, as we just spoke about, but it's also a really great opportunity, I think, for us as an organization and as an orchestra to go out there and share this music with so many people in various places.
Right, and so many opportunities all across the listening area to be part of this. So just go to jacksymphony.org, pick your concert, because there you've got a bunch over the holiday. Conductor Samir Patel joining us, and thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Again, that's jacksymphony.org. Get out and see some great music over the Memorial Day weekend. And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. The show's producer is Sean Birch. The show's theme is composed and performed by Pyotr Chevchik of the Symphony. If you have any feedback about this show, emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to catch our daily podcasts. They're now up on iTunes. Next on Die and Ream, the Islamic State terrorist group captures the key Iraqi city of Ramadi and establishes a stronger foothold in Libya. An update on the latest battles for territorial control and questions over U.S. strategy. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.